All right. Well, welcome, everybody, to the HSTLD normal call. We just had our technical call. As traditional, I'll go through the attendees roll call, and then we'll look at the agenda. If anyone has any agenda updates they'd like to discuss, certainly can. And then we'll get right into, if we don't have any updates, we'll get right into the agenda content. So if you don't hear me call your name, please let me know. I've got Mikey O'Connor, Jonathan Franks, John McElwain, Lynn Goodendorf, Joe St. Sauer, Mike Pelage, Derek Andre, and of course me, Andy Welch. Did I miss anyone?
Andy, it's Jonathan. Jonathan Frakes, not...
I keep saying Jonathan. It's Jonathan.
Jonathan.
Yes, I hear everything.
Jonathan,
it's like
I'm
sorry. It's like
my real name is my real name is Winthrop, so the name is Winthrop Welch, and I always get people say, try to call Welch my first name or Winthrop my first name, so I can appreciate that, and I ask for your forgiveness.
Oh, Andy, that's information you're going to regret giving out.
Yeah, uh-oh, now are you guys going to assume my identity?
Winthrop Welch. Wow.
Yeah, it's a
the wheels are turning.
His middle name is Wally. Actually, the web's named after him. His initial.
Al Gore and I, we were hanging out together. Okay, everybody, welcome to the call again. Does anybody, first of all, did everyone get the agenda? And second, does anybody have any desire to amend the agenda items or flow? Okay, give everyone just a second to get off mute there. So today's agenda really is two items. The first is to talk about the draft applicant guidebook for paragraph. So we had a draft paragraph. We had some excellent feedback on from various members of the group late last week and early this week. I'd like to submit that for inclusion in the applicant guidebook for. In order to do that, I have to get it out by tomorrow to the applicant. Well, sorry, Friday is the latest day, but more desirable would be tomorrow to the draft applicant guidebook publishing team. excuse me. And then the second item is the HSTLD development snapshot number 2 that was sent out yesterday. So very briefly, that's our second development snapshot. It updates the first development snapshot that was generated at Nairobi. And wanted to have a quick conversation sort of around that. So with that, we have some language, and I'm just going to pull it up here. Bear with me here for a second. We have some language that was sent around in an email by me yesterday at 12:44, and basically, it's in italics, and it says, ICANN and its stakeholders are currently developing a special designation for high-security zone top-level domains through a separate high-security or separate HSTLD program. This voluntary designation is for top-level domains that demonstrate and uphold enhanced security-minded practices and policies. While any registry operator, including successful new GTLD applicants, will be eligible to participate in this program, its development and operation are beyond the scope of this guidebook. An applicant's election to pursue an HSTLD designation is entirely independent of the evaluation process and will require completion of an additional set of requirements. For additional information on the HSTLD program, including current program development material and activities, please refer to the following link, and that little TBD there would then presumably link to our development snapshot number 2 and or the wiki board with our development material on it. So I know we had a lot of conversation around this over the last week or so. excuse me. Does anyone have any questions or comments on that paragraph?
Andy, would it be possible to just throw that up real quick in the Adobe? I just in case some people don't have the email handy. Just
let me try to. Again, I'm an Adobe noob.
I put it this way, if it's somewhat of a hassle, is there anyone who does not have that text in front of them that would benefit by having it on the Adobe, or does everyone feel comfortable? I'll take silence as everyone feels comfortable. Is there anyone...
Yeah.
Okay, so is there anyone that has any objections to that text appearing in Dagmar? There we go. We're moving right along. And just to give everyone a quick update, Andy, I think I copied you on the email this morning from ICANN staff on getting the electronic vote.
I haven't had time to read it in detail, but yeah.
Okay, so basically, just to give everyone an update, the vote that we had, the items that we had agreed to vote upon, ICANN staff in the next day or two will be putting up an electronic voting forum or booth using one of the subscribers that they use, so that everyone on the everyone within the group will be able to participate. So that's kind of an update, and you do not need to read that email, Andy.
Thanks a bunch, Mike. And I'm trying to now upload the program development snapshot onto our Adobe Connect site as well. Bear with me here. All right. So here it is, the development snapshot number 2. Before I dive into the content details, has anyone reviewed it, and are there any overarching questions we should get into? Okay. I'll put it up on the wiki site. I'll go through the major elements of the document. The idea is that this would be the document or part of the documents that would be referenced from our DAG paragraph and would be published for public comment for Brussels. So that means that it has to get out in the next week or so as well, so that we have time for the public comment period. I don't remember exactly what the cutoff date is, but I know it's coming up in the next couple of days. So I tried to put this Thursday, Friday time frame on as when we wanted to get responses back, so we'd have plenty of time to be prepared for public comment. As with the other development snapshot, I've cut off where I'm going to gather information from our email list in the wiki on the 13th. Which I believe is Friday, although I better check because my date challenged lately, as everyone's been pointing out. I'm sorry, it's tomorrow, Thursday. I can obviously change that if we've got really important and critical content that comes in on, say, Friday. I'll update that date, but I'm trying to give us a sort of a cutoff date to say, this snapshot and the content of the snapshot are current as of X, so the reader knows when we've taken the snapshot. As with our first one, we've got the general layout is the same. Status of the document, summary, and standards are the same. I added a little section here that basically says sections that are new, and let me make this a little bigger. It's hard to see. Sections that are new or update or have updated content are identified through the qualifier in brackets updated next to their section headings so that the readers know what's been changed. And we can look at our index here. We can see there's been some updates to the executive summary. There's been development activities certainly that have been updated. Much of the formation of the group, the goal statement, the problem and benefits, and the report card content, we haven't really made significant changes to that content since this was originally published. So that hasn't really changed. But the principles, topics, objectives, sample criteria certainly has been updated. So that's got a little update next to it. Our next steps are updated. And we've now got an Appendix A. That's the HSTLD control worksheet that we were talking about in the technical call. That's updated. In fact, that's new. Any questions on the general contents? Okay. We have subtle updates to the executive summary. I had a sentence in here that I've removed, and actually it was a sentence about how there was general positive feedback to the program. Actually, it's in this version. I apologize. I'll have to change this. It's this sentence here. Much of the community response to the concept paper was positive. I'm removing this sentence to keep it more neutral. That comes out of Nairobi feedback. Hey, Evan, I just saw that you rang in. Everyone, Evan is here as well. That sentence, we got feedback on from the Nairobi material, so I will be removing that sentence in the final copy. That's the update to this section. The other stuff is the same. Development activities have been updated. Originally, we just had development activities for the first snapshot. That's all we had. We've got now new stuff for our new development release, and here's the significant things that we've done. We've added some additional members to the AG. We've now got a full draft of the HSTLD control matrix where we did not before. We've got additional material regarding the application of the control matrix that's further down in the development snapshot. And I have here, and we may not get this done in time, I could remove this or keep it in, but we have some recommendations. This is assuming we get the voting done. We'll have recommendations about these three areas. Formation of the AG, this is the same. We haven't really changed that. It was the same. The requirements and rationale is the same. Development material is the same. Group statement, problem statement. None of this was really we really focused on. It's been the same. Same with the benefit statement. And report card, the general concept is still the same as well. Okay. The principles, topics, objectives, and sample criteria section is significantly updated. The background has just slightly been changed. It talks about the original concept paper and where this section originated from. And then I get into language here. The program was designed to enhance security, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. This language you'll recognize is very similar to the paragraph that is going into the applicant guidebook as we go from background into actual current development. The current development really tries to define what we're working on. And it talks about, really what I do here is I break down the control spreadsheet into its various components, including the standards and non-standard sections. And then it talks about each column and what each column is trying to achieve with some rough ideas of the numbers of, for instance, topics and principles and objectives criteria in each column. Then talks about the control examples, how they're illustrative examples. And here's language where we talk about the activities may not be applicable to all TLD circumstances, how the determination of the control objectives will be reviewed by a qualified third party assessor and so forth. And then again, in that section, we break down each column, and we talk about what each column represents and what the information in each column contains. Is there any overall question about this section? It's new. Again, it's meant to qualify or describe what we're putting in from Appendix A perspective. Okay, I think we've been through it a few times, so it should be familiar to everybody. I'd ask everyone to sort of take a quick eyeball on it and, again, raise questions on the email chain if there are any. And then the final section is, the second to the final section is next steps. This is updated. What I'm saying here is that we'll have weekly meetings in Brussels, and continued development in the following areas. We're going to have some responses to community comments, obviously, particularly if we have this out for community comment before Brussels. Continue to develop the foundational material, methods of assessment, qualifications of third-party assessors, and overall program governance and actors. The thought here is that, you know, out of our recommendation to ICANN, we might have things like an RFI or a series of RFIs and so forth that would impact governance and actors. And then we leave space for Appendix A, which is the control worksheet, which is the document that we've been discussing in our technical calls. That's that spreadsheet that was attached to the email as well. Excuse me, everybody. So that's the material in this snapshot. Any overall feedback or changes that we should be considering to this? All right. Silence is good on that one. Okay. So with that, that's actually the two major. I tried to leave us. Oh, thanks, Evan. I see you and Mr. Frakes are giving good feedback. Thank you. So that's actually the major agenda items that I'd lined up that I wasn't sure if we'd have a lot of dialogue around or not for today. Mike Pelage, unless you've got some additional areas we want to talk about from a voting perspective, perhaps what we should do is take the remainder of the time and dive back into the control worksheet.
Deep dive away.
Okay. Let me bring that back up again on the Adobe Connect then. In the meantime, if somebody wants to ask questions, just feel free to grab a piece of the floor.
Andy, this is Evan, just for the Adobe Connect, is there a possible of having sort of the list of people there so you can have the hands up and check marks and all that good stuff?
Sure. Hold on. Let me see if I can figure out how to do that. I'm a total Adobe Connect noob. I apologize. I'm very limited in my knowledge there.
I know the feeling.
Andy, this is Mikey. If you give me control, I can help you with that.
Oh, cool. Okay. Let me see if I can do that. Let me first get the material to you, Mikey, and then I'll.
No, I don't need material. Just add me on as a. Up in the meeting section at the top there, there's a little drop-down menu.
Yep. All right.
Either there or on the actual list of participants.
I go to meeting access and entry, and then let's see how I do this.
I don't know. It you probably better focus on getting the little window open first. It's much harder to do it without the window there.
All right.
I'm starting to feel sorry I asked.
No, I asked before, Evan. If you look back up at the top of the chat,
yep.
Okay, here
there
we go.
I am asking the same thing. There we go. Great job.
Ah, wonderful.
There you go, Mikey. Now, I think, let's see here.
Now, if you click on me, you can turn me in. You can give me godlike power.
Let's give you god power. Set user role. Set as presenter?
I think there's one higher than that.
That is host.
Yeah, host. Give
there
me
you
that.
Go.
Yeah,
yeah,
there we go.
Make Mikey a host.
Power user. Yeah. All right, take it away, Mikey.
Thanks. Okay,
I'm going to open this up to full screen. And I guess, Mikey, you can override me, so feel free to at any time.
Oh, no, I'm just there to – I'm only here to help.
I don't mind being overridden, especially when my voice is given up. Okay. So, Evan, in last hour's call, we got through much of the criteria, objectives, and illustrative – well, we had a very brief overview of some of the illustrative control examples for area – for principle number two.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to keep diving through those and making everyone dizzy. I apologize. No, we're not allowed to call it DAG, by the way. I made a slip up on that. Okay, I think we got through, let's see here, financial we got through. We were talking about background screening, I think. The last thing we talked about was right up here. Right here, the 2 years. So the last thing we talked about, can everyone see where I am on the page? We're talking about the, let's see, this is the revalidation of the registry operator. Okay. So the last thing we talked about was that every 2 years, and the suggestion was maybe make that every 2.5 years. So HSTLDs could elect to sort of time that with their re-upping of their agreement. So I'm going to change this 2 to 2.5. The next criteria objective talks about screening and background. So procedures exist defining the screening and background verification process of employees and contractors in accordance with established requirements. So this is all about making sure that the actors that come and work within a TLD are vetted in some way to give us additional comfort that they're good actors. Again, not a guarantee, but at least we've got a process to look at these things and certainly notice if there are overtly bad actors coming in. The first illustrative example is one of our nice little NAs, and it talks about whether the HSTLD sponsor should verify whether the following have been made available by the candidate registry operator, and it's the process employed to screen its employees before they are hired, and the training requirements for employees after they're hired. Again, that's about process. Again, we fall to the old WebTrust EV, some really good requirements here that these are drawn from about verifying and background checking. I'll glaze over these, but certainly have a look at them if you're interested. Then we get to our next criteria, which is information regarding the identity and location of the registrar's principal's employees should be obtained and validated according to defined policy. So the distinction there is registrar. The two NAs we have here are registrar shall provide a detailed background of its principals and make available for review and validation. And the registrar shall maintain a physical address of the place of business and make it available for review and validation. I'll skip over these. Again, this is all about looking at the registrar's contact information, physical address, and so forth. Telephone number we have here, you can see. We talk about articles of incorporation here because we're talking about the registrar level. As we noted in last hour's call, we had a bit of this up in the registry level above.
The only thing I'd want to say to that is articles of incorporation, I don't know if that's a globally universal term. You might want something more generic, that is, you know, registration of a corporation or, you know, corporate registration or something like that. I'm just saying there's some things you may want to make them a little bit more global.
Definitely would welcome specific suggestions. The thinking that we applied to this in last hour was the areas here, so the stuff on the right, these are illustrative control examples, and we've created an illustrative example for one TLD, but any given TLD that applies for an HSTLD verification will probably deviate from some of these activities with equivalent or better activities of their own. So in other words,
I understand what you're saying. All I'm trying to get at is to basically make the wording of the document a little less,
more generic.
Shall we say, American.
Okay. So I saw somebody had raised very quickly in my screen and I missed it. Articles of incorporation, perhaps some additional or alternate language.
I'm being finicky about that. All I'm suggesting is that just through the document, just consider that this is going out to a global document, to a global audience with TLDs that could be starting anywhere in the world, and that there might be certain legalisms or legal terms that may be really, really comfortable to North Americans, but might be literally foreign to others.
Okay, so
I'm just saying, keep it in mind while you're going through the wording of this.
Derek, I think it was yours. Is this the documentation of business entity? Is that what you're suggesting is perhaps alternate terms for that?
Yeah, that was just a suggestion. Yeah, this is Eric. That's the basic point, is that we need to make sure we're not in Delaware. I'll go back on mute now.
Okay. So does I'll switch that articles of incorporation with documentation of business entity.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not meaning to pick nits here, just to make sure everyone realizes, you know, that this is going to be used by a very global audience.
No, very good point. Very good point, Evan. And I think we need to, you know, I tried to do as much as I could, but we'll get it better as we go. Again, we talked about the certificate of formation. That's about the registrar. If anyone has alternate language there, send it out. Send it round to us in the email chain, and I'll make sure that we change accordingly. We talk about charter documents. It's about the charter of the registrar. Again, we have the registry stuff up above. A business license. We talk about, we do try to be a little broad here about the location and country. I gave, again, it's a sample, so I had to say something, but acknowledge that, you know, could be different in the country which the, you know, entity is in. Talk about a DBA. So all this registrar stuff down here, proof of registration of trade name, we've already covered similar controls to these. In fact, almost word for word above with the registry. And if we look above, we're trying to make sure that all of these activities happen at both the registry and registrar. Then we get to our next criteria, which is different. Information regarding accreditation status and renewal must be publicly provided. I couldn't really draw any control standards here, so these are all NAs. But it's about the registrar. So the first one is, registrar shall provide its current accreditation status as of time of the self-certification. The registrar shall provide its date of accreditation expiry as of the time of self-certification. And then finally, the registrar shall provide its planned date of accreditation renewal as of time of self-certification. So we're asking to make sure that this is there and publicly provided. The next one is, registrars are revalidated periodically according to defined procedures. This is, again, on that two-year clock. I'll move the two-year verbiage to 2.5 years on our suggestion from last call, so that'll be 2.5 years in the next revision. And the activity is, the registrar shall be subject to the entire vetting process for revalidation every 2.5 years, corresponding with the requirements for the HSTLD. And hopefully, if they time it right, for their five-year re-upping and contract re-upping as well. Our next control criteria is that procedures exist to prevent abusive domain name registration practices by the entity's users and take appropriate actions when violations are discovered. So now we're getting down to a layer below. So we've talked a lot about the structure and proof that the entities are good actors. Now we're actually getting to some abusive stuff. You can see that a lot of my control examples come from draft applicant guidebook sources. They've got some good stuff in there. And what we're talking about is rights protection mechanisms in the first one be mandated. Next one is about developing additional rights protection mechanisms that discourage or prevent registration of domain names that violate or abuse another party's legal rights. Talk a little bit more about registrar registry agreement and rights protection mechanisms. Then we get to some NA.
Andy?
Yep, go, please shoot.
It's Brian.
Hi, Brian.
How you doing? Thanks for the floor. This is an area that, you know, I've raised before in prior calls that I think is going to be of distinct interest to the registry operator, because we're really now wading into, correct me if I'm wrong, areas where the registrar in question may be engaged in some abusive registration practices. And just to pick up on a couple of threads there, I think the back-end provider developing practices that discourage. Can we spend a little time talking about, from a third-party auditor's standpoint, what are you going to be looking? Let's assume that your firm is providing third party validation.
Right, we're doing an assessment. Right.
Yeah, an assessment. How far? What do you look for specifically? Are you? Is it a? Do they have a policy in place? There's the policy. I see it. It exists. Training has taken place. Implementation has taken place. How granular do you go in terms of what the registry or back-end provider is doing on this front? And do you ever get the how much did they know and when do they know it question in terms of what a registrar may be doing in, with regard to abusive practices, and what's the scope of that?
Okay. Let me try to cast a little bit of a wide net here, and we can narrow it in as we go.
Can I add something? There.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
We're treading into the PDDRP territory, which is the subject of the temporary drafting group legal, one of the two subjects of that list, when Brian mentioned the what did they know and when did they know it kind of question. I just wanted to point that out before we sail off merrily to...
out of control. Okay.
Before we sail off merrily to willfully blind and other similar standards, and with that, I'll put back on mute.
Okay. I can't necessarily speak to that specific development because I'm not a part of it. But Brian, to specifically sort of let's dig into your question wide, and then we'll narrow down so we can get to the right ground. So, if I were to come in from an assessment perspective, the first thing I do is I look at this objective criteria. So it's about the procedures existing, right? So I'd want to see at a very procedural level what the TLD is doing in this area. So this this criteria. So it's about the procedures preventing abusive domain registration practice. And I've got some basis for some illustrative examples here. So let's take these. The first one is the candidate registry operator and or backend registry service provider should implement and adhere to any rights protection mechanisms that may be mandated from time to time by the sponsor or community. So presumably there'd be a process that I could look at, and I would have evidence of executing through either a written document or some emails over a period of time that would show that this activity was occurring. Okay? Ultimately, a really good way to prove that would be to have a documented process that says, you know, we, HSTLD, do the following. So that's the documentation part of the process. And then I could trace that they were indeed doing those activities through either a paper document, an email, or something that would be dated, and I could see that it happened. From an audit perspective, that's what I want to look at so that I have comfort that indeed it was being accomplished.
Okay, that's clear. Your response is clear. Is that the full scope of what a third-party auditor would look at, or is there more?
What is the concern? I mean, really, you're going to look to make sure that there are sufficient procedures. So the first burden or the first dialogue would be, okay, Mr. Subscribing or applicant HSTLD, show me what your procedures are. So they should. I would want them to be at least covering these areas that we have in the illustrative examples, and maybe more if they have more. That's great. So I should see documentation of each of these procedures or equivalent procedures, and I should also see proof of execution of the procedures.
Is there any comment about timeliness? Because one of the things, of course, with the UDRP and things like that was the speed at which this all moved. So is there anything in here making sure not only that it's being done, but it's being done at least as fast as the minimum regulations require?
Um, I would expect if there are standards that come out, Evan, we would definitely want to make sure that the actions comply to the standards, of course.
Okay, then you might want general language just saying that it meets or exceeds the core requirements regarding regarding abuse.
All right, let me do this. Criteria 2.3, I just need to make a note to myself. Meets or exceeds the criteria, I guess the abuse criteria. Is it defined by core requirements? Is that what you said, Evan?
Or it might be defined, well, it's not from the RA, but I mean, wherever ICANN defines, you know, here's how, somewhere there's a regulation saying who has to respond to, you know, UDRP actions and how fast. I don't know if that, I don't think, is that in the RAA? Or is it elsewhere?
Maybe what we could say is meets or exceeds existing abuse criteria standards.
Don't say existing, because if they change, then they change. Just it meets or exceeds established.
Okay. Abuse criteria standards. Okay. I can add that language. That would cover us very resolutely, I think, Evan.
Yep.
Brian, does that get to your question as well, looping sort of back to you?
It does. I guess what I want to confirm is I heard you say that these would be based on standards mandated by the community or by the sponsoring entity, so that if there was an HSTLD that was had something to do with movies and it was sponsored by a film institute, they could craft their own requirements that might exceed community established requirements, and that's what you would look at as the auditor.
Yes.
Is that you're right?
Okay. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, the areas where this gets interesting are areas where the sort of the HSTLD sponsor disagrees with the auditor. That does happen, you know, in lots of regulations that happens. And that usually boils down to a longer dialogue at which there's a resolution of some sort. So it's not uncommon that happens. There are existing structures where it does happen. And it's not a bad thing to have happen, but generally speaking, the guidance that we're providing here should give us a level to look at. And I think that language of meets or exceeds established abuse criteria standards gives us a little bit stronger footing. I actually like that.
Can I ask a follow-up question, Andy?
Sure, absolutely.
When you come in with your auditors or validators hat on, to do your exercise, your review, do you do that? Do you receive information or data about the practices of the TLD operator before you sit down and start reviewing existing procedures? I guess what I'm getting at is, let's assume that there's been complaints of abusive registrations over the last 6 months. Do you receive that kind of data before you sit down to do your interview, or is it literally kind of an in vacuum, sit down, review the policies, the procedures, the implementations, ...
We actually look at it in terms of the specific criteria. So we really try to be looking at the criteria objectives. You know, provided this program follows what might be auditing practice, United States auditing practices, we'd look at the criteria. I think the nature of your question is more, do we have criteria that we would look at that would cover some of those items? And the answer is we do. There's some criteria that talk about the TLD's response to problems. So we cover that as a component of this program review because it's built into the program itself. The control environment has controls for that.
Okay, thank
Andy,
you.
Andy, this is Mikey.
Go ahead, Mikey.
I haven't kept track of this well enough to know. Do you have something in this document that specifies that this is going to follow generally accepted auditing practices?
Auditing standards? I didn't.
And if so, which standards? Because, again, just like we talked before about being careful not to always make this USA-centric, I don't know if there are internationally recognized auditing standards that you can point to in this area.
You
have to be careful on that one.
So your question is a fantastic one. I have not developed anything, nor has anyone else in the group developed anything, to my knowledge, that clarifies that, and specifically for that concern.
I think the cautionary note is that when you answered Brian's question, you were basically speaking as a representative of your firm.
Yes.
Saying this is the way we would do it. But
that's
Brian's
right.
Question
it may not be the way
is broader than that. And
yes.
He is, and I think that the possibility exists that one firm would do it one way, another firm would do it another, and that's probably something that we'd want to tighten up somehow, perhaps with some sort of statement about what kind of auditing standards need to be adhered to, et cetera, et cetera. Because otherwise, I think what happens is your answer is great, but it only works if...
It's a guess.
Yeah, it's a guess. And right. I was trying to be a little more diplomatic than that, but there you go. And so, you know, I think we need to, you know, sort of tie that off a little bit. That's all.
Yeah, and if you notice, you know, I have emphasis in next steps, some of the areas that sort of need to be focused on for the group. And one of them is the qualifications. The way I put it, I don't have it in front of me, I apologize, but it's qualifications of the assessor. And that is about who can be an assessor, what standards do they follow. All of those types of things are sort of an open area that needs to be developed as part of the program. And, you know, possibly those big questions, if we're presuming that we vote that a recommendation from the group should say that this program should be there should be an RFI for the operation of this program, then maybe the operator of the program should really inherit some of those building objectives. I don't know. I'm just saying that, you know, we haven't really spent a ton of time answering that particular part of it yet. So you're absolutely right. The way I answer things may not be the way this actually ends up. It's just a way that reviews are done today in for certain entities.
Okay, well, this is Mikey again. I may be putting words in Brian's mouth, but I know Brian well enough that he'll hit me with a stick if I go too far. I think the issue here is that depending on the answer to his question, a lot of folks in the community may or may not support the approach we're taking. So I don't know if we can punt the approach down the line quite that far. I think we may at least have to have some thoughts. You know, going back to his example, the example was, does the reviewer only look at the entity in essentially the vacuum of this program, or do they also look at other data? That's a pretty tasty question, and I think we probably need to have an answer for that kind of question, because I think it'll make a huge difference in the way that this program actually works.
What I would offer is a way to deal with that would be to say, look, you know, this is the current draft control standard, and obviously this control standard is going to be modified over time. So if there are some key things that would, in development of the program, necessitate the modification of the standard, that might be one of them.
Yeah, but you want to be careful that the standard itself is not modified too frequently. That, you know, you're putting up a standard by definition. It's a target that others are going to be designing things to meet, and you've got to be super, super careful that that when you build in for changes, the changes are infrequent and major when they happen.
Agreed.
Andy, this is Eric. Can I
Hi, Eric.
Say something?
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to follow up on what Mikey said, which was in response to the issue that Brian raised. This was actually what we attempted to discuss in the first third, I suppose, of the technical call, starting at 4, was whether or not we look at data outside of the audit. So I wanted to plus one to Mikey's comment. Thank you.
Okay. I guess the final thought that I'll throw out there is a couple things. So if anyone has any thoughts on international bodies and standards for international bodies that could do this, definitely, you know, let's get that out there to the email group. And then have a dialogue around it. It's just, you know, we haven't spent a lot of time in that area of development. Okay.
This is Mikey. I don't think I don't think we want to put you on the spot, Andy. I think the main thing is just to make sure that we get it done before we call this baked. That's all.
Yeah, and I don't think in its current, you know, in its current rev, you know, we're saying that this is a draft. We're, you know, saying it's a development snapshot. I've been as careful as I can to use that language that we're still working on stuff. So I think we're okay there. But again, you know, if anyone wants to change language or make it different, let me know. I obviously work with everyone to make it the right language.
Andy?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's Brian. And this really is a partly naive question. I have talked to our auditing firm, PwC, a bit about this program. They've reviewed what's going on, but we haven't really engaged in depth. In response to your question about the development of the global standard, I understand that that's important for all the reasons we've talked about in the last half hour. I'm not sure I understand mechanically how in the auditing world these standards get developed. Is it a number of firms like yourselves and PwC and others that are non-U.S. based come together in an effort to develop a standard? Is there a standards body or a couple of them? How does that
happen? Actually, that's a really good question. So it kind of depends on the vehicle that you're talking about. But in general, there are standards sort of country to country. For instance, in the States, we've got the AICPA, the American Certified Public Accountants, and they have sort of their way of doing things, right? And it actually includes you know, various types of auditing standards that they publish, right? And if you go sort of from locale to locale, there are sort of similar constructs if you're talking about the public accounting world. If you get out of the public accounting world for a minute, there are also some international types of programs. The ISO 27000 program is a sort of an internationalized program that has assessors associated with it as well. So there's various types of models that I can point to and say, if you want to, you know, sort of dig down a little and understand how they work, you know, check out the wiki page for the ISO 27000 stuff. Look maybe a little bit at the AICPA. That's the American stuff. You know, the challenge is there's really no, to my knowledge, and perhaps this is my limited knowledge, but I don't know if there's a, you know, a public accounting international standard that would fit this. But there may be like the ISO type standards that would fit this. So I'm trying to be very careful here because obviously, you know, I'm part of an accounting firm. I don't want it to seem like I'm leaning toward that as the only answer. And tainting my view. That's something I do want everyone to appreciate. I'm trying not to say that it needs to be a CPA firm, so rather overtly, if you will. So it's difficult to me because that's the area that I know the best. But I'm also trying to fairly say there's other things that are out there that could be looked at and examined as models as well, like the ISO series.
And I appreciate you stating that and being right up front. That is I really do appreciate you calling that out. Here's my question as an uninitiated person. I am familiar enough with some of those standards bodies, if you will, or and Steve Pack, our CFO, was on one of the last calls. My understanding is that this program that's been fleshed out, the skeleton of it, if you will, that there are some existing standards programs out there, SAS and some others, that cover portions of what we've put together here, but there are other portions of this that really are unique and new and novel. So I guess my question is, if we don't have within the four corners of this document something that you would take in whole to AICPA or in whole to ISO, then where does this get homed, particularly the portions of it that don't map to any of the existing organizations, and how does that get those portions get developed into something that would be recognized as a global standard and you know, verified, and everyone would nod their head and say, yeah, that's a standard? How does it happen mechanistically?
That's actually a great question, and part of the reason that we wanted to get a vote out there about, so presumably there'd be a program operator role, right? And some entity would fill the role of operating this program, and, you know, working with the assessors, granting the seals, you know, those sort of operational things. Presumably whichever entity was the program operator would have the responsibility to get those standards and to make them happen.
Okay. So we're talking about standing up a standards body.
Or working with an existing standards body. Yes, that's one possible outcome. And the other possible outcome is finding an existing standards body that would be willing to take this on, right? And then of course, if there's, you know, there's pros and cons in each. The pro and con in standing it up on its own, look, the pro in standing it up on its own is now you've potentially got a new sort of international body that could do this. The con is sort of who would do it, right, and what's their incentive. And if you look at it from an existing standards body, the pro would be, well, hey, maybe one of the pros may be, hey, maybe there doesn't need to be as much financial incentive for them to do it because they already do other things. This is just a minor upgrade to them. The con is that there are very few, you know, really holistically international bodies that would be able to do this. Most of the bodies do have locale associated with them. So is that a con? I'm not sure. And then the other con is, you know, would they be willing to take this on, right? What is in it for them, if you will? So there's sort of those risks on both sides of the coin. But that option is out there. Those two options are out there. So some new entity or some existing entity, I think, are both very valid options that need to be looked at.
Okay, thanks. And I know we've touched on this a bit in past discussions, but thanks for really going through that in that detail. That was helpful.
Not a problem at all.
This is Mikey again. I want to kind of put a wrapper around this and say that I think one of the things in our document that we need is something like outstanding issues or a letter to the future or something. And one of the ones that I would put in there is sort of take a snapshot of this last 10-minute discussion kicked off by Brian's question. I think another one that we've talked about before is the scope of who needs to be bound by these standards. Registrars, registries, registrants, et cetera. And I think we are not doing a real good job of capturing those outstanding issues and taking a snapshot of where we're at. So I'd ask you to start building a little list of those, just so we don't lose them again. And also, so that, because we've had this discussion before, and we always seem to kind of come to this not quite satisfactory conclusion, and I'd like to at least acknowledge that we just don't know that yet and get that in the document.
Mikey, I've got a section, maybe it needs a little more qualification, but the section 3 of this snapshot 2 has next steps, and I call out specifically we need to look at methods of assessment. So that's specifically what we talked about in terms of how it would be assessed. qualifications of the third party assessors. So that's who are they, and then overall program governance and actors. Those are the three of the five items that I had in the next steps. Is that getting to what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that it would be useful to get it just a little bit. You know, quite frankly, I've been delinquent. I haven't read the document. I apologize for that. To the extent that those are fleshed out well, then I'm a happy camper. If they're just those bullets, I think we need to capture some of the nuance of the discussion that we just had and stick that under those.
Yeah, maybe what I can do is put a couple of sentences after, sort of give context of what they are, some of the areas that are covered in those bullets.
Yeah, I think. Sorry.
Certainly, I'm trying not to lose sight of them. I do have them called out there, and that's specifically what I'm thinking of when I have those called out there. Maybe just with a couple of qualifiers in there.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
No. Great feedback, everybody. Okay. Time check. We are at the hour. So, Mike Palazzo, are you still on?
I'm still here. I'm just being quiet, uncharacteristically.
Can I turn over to you to go around the horn and close up the call?
Yeah, sure. Do you have the list, I should just be able to do it real quick off of this. Okay, Mikey. You want to get any? You spoke for a while. You're done enough today. Brian, are you still on, or have you dropped off?
Yeah, I am. And no, only thing to say, Mikey, I don't have to pick up my stick. Thanks a lot.
Excellent, Derek.
Nope, nothing further to add. I think we did some good work today, though.
Is that a zero?
Yeah, I think we did have we did make a lot of good progress here. So it definitely was a good two back-to-back calls. Eric?
I'm fine. Plus one to what Mike said again. We need to capture the things that we keep slipping on.
I'm all for that. Evan?
Yeah, sorry to come in late. I hope it wasn't a better call because I wasn't on most of it, but... no, you've done some pretty good stuff here.
Joe?
I think he's on mute. Oh, no, he's disconnected. Sorry.
He disconnected. Jonathan?
Hey, thanks for getting my name right, would be my comment this week. And then my obligatory word, voluntary. That's it. Thanks.
There you go. Lynn?
Yep. And I agree that both calls were productive today.
All right. Excellent. And again, Andy, thanks for the tremendous amount of heavy lifting that you're doing and taking all the constructive feedback that we have as a group. So thanks again. And what was it again, Andy, just real quick? You wanted any potential feedback before what, Thursday or Friday? I'm just
Thursday,
trying to look.
Friday. Let's say Friday because that puts me right up to the day that I need to submit.
All right. Excellent. All right, I will circle that out. Again, I'll probably, maybe if you or I want to just push a friendly reminder out to the entire list since not everyone was on this call. And then, again, hopefully we should have that online electronic voting mechanism up within the next couple of days. So thanks again, everyone, and talk to everyone next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, all.